Thanks for checking out the Fabric Podcast. This episode features Lindsay Walls talking about the art of togethering through hard things. Lindsay's no stranger to hard things. After a harrowing experience on the 35W bridge as it collapsed, she leaned into art, and here helps us lean both toward the hard and hopeful parts of life, as together we practice the art of togethering.
Hi everybody, I'm Lindsay Walls. How many of you lived here 15 years ago? Raise your hand. Okay. And so most of you remember the bridge collapse, right? So do all of you probably can keep your hands raised if you have a story of yourself that day, right? And some of you are maybe guests, but if you didn't live here 15 years ago, did you also hear about that story? Okay. So we are all pretty informed about that event. I'm a product of that event, I guess you could call it. So I'm not going to go into too much depth about my story of the day. I can tell you that I was 24 at the time, which I now know is I was just a... like, holy cow. I thought I was all grown up and knew what was going on with my life, but I was a baby. And I was coming home from my day job working with teenagers who had really hard things going on in their lives and got stuck in traffic, ended up at the middle of the bridge when it did finally collapse. And then I had a harrowing story and relationship with the Mississippi River. If you want to know more and really understand my story, it's everywhere. Just Google me. But today I want to talk about the aftermath, because the aftermath is the thing that not many people tell the story of when hard things happen. They tell the story of the hard thing, the disaster, the even the triumph afterwards when we've healed and we're all better and we can smile for the camera. But the in-between is the part that most of us have the hardest time with, and most of us do kind of on our own for a lot of things. And so today we're talking about the art of togethering through the hard things. So Melissa introduced me as an artist. I did not come to being an artist, and I still kind of go, oh, I don't know if that's actually the word to describe me. But art came into my life after the bridge collapse. So one quick recap, I had a broken back. I have PTSD. Those are just things that happened. In the aftermath, coming away from that experience, I knew that I had a lot that my heart needed to do to heal. And it took a very long time to do that. When I was sitting at home about a month after the bridge collapse and my back brace, not being able to do much, I got a community ed flyer, and it said there was this class called soul painting, and it said you didn't have to be good at it. And I was like, okay, that sounds like something I can do. And, you know, the bridge collapse wasn't the first hard thing that had happened in my life. And in a past life before that happened, I watched other people who'd experienced hard things lean into art as a process to process what they were going through. And so I decided, yes, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to this painting class that I don't have to be good at, and I'm going to paint something. And I walked in with my brace and my pillow and started painting. I was introduced to the art of soul painting, intuitive painting. Don't have to be good at it. And I had these white, at the time, poster boards. So I came in, walked in, there's just a poster sheet, huge, which is really intimidating, a lot of white space to cover, oh my gosh. And an ice cube tray full of paints, all different colors. So I had this big piece of white paper, I'm not good at painting, oh, what am I gonna do? And the thing at the time that I was constantly aware of was the Mississippi River. And so I decided to start covering up this white piece of paper with a big brown chunk of Mississippi River. And I know it's really brown. It's not you don't think of the Mississippi as brown, but I washed my hair for the first time about 5 days after the bridge collapse, and it took about 3 washes to get all of the dirt out of my hair. And so that was one of the things that was really on me and like in me at the time. So I just covered half of the page with that. And then I was really aware of just all of the icky feelings, right? Like the anger, the sadness, all of the stuff that I wasn't actually even feeling, if that, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but I kind of described myself in the aftermath. I was almost like a zombie, kind of a ghost, a shell of myself. And so that included not having all of these icky feelings, but they were feelings that I knew I deserved to have in the aftermath of that. And so I decided to use my paint colors to represent those feelings and even just embrace them a little bit. So on the top of the Mississippi, which I guess maybe was the East Bank, I don't know, I decided to do red and black and some gray. And I just kind of used my paintbrush in this like angry motions and kind of stippled with it and just allowed myself to use the color and the process and the strokes to represent the feeling that was kind of in me, but I also knew that I needed to lean into, right? And as I was doing that, as I, you know, I had this tray, this pink, like, ice cube tray full of bright, beautiful colors, and all I was doing was using black and red and gray, and that felt incomplete. And I knew that before the bridge collapsed, those bright, happy colors were the colors that I would have been drawn to. They were the colors that I would have wanted on my paper. And so it started to help me in that process of looking at those colors to remember that there were things that were bright and positive about that day and about the days afterwards. And so if you lived here at the time, you can probably remember some of those stories. You remember the people who rushed down the riverbank to get to people and to help them. You remember the fundraisers and all of the things that happened publicly to support survivors at the time. And things that nobody saw from my life that also happened were, like, we were supposed to move a month later, and so all of my family had to move my husband and I from one apartment to another while I just sat there in a back brace, feeling very useless. I grew up in a tiny little town of 250 people, and they had a fundraiser for me and raised $10,000 to help me with my medical bills. I had folks who did those, like, pre-make meals and bring them to me so that we didn't have to worry about that. My mom was home from, she was a teacher at the time, and so she had the summer off the rest of August and stayed with me and washed our clothes and cleaned up and did all of these things that needed to be done. And all of those were bright moments, right? Bright things that happened in the midst of the hard stuff. And we've all, in the last couple of years, experienced some of those collective hard things as well, right? And we know that those hard things have also come with bright spots, right? So if you remember, as in the days right as the pandemic was happening to all of us, right? What were some of the bright spots that you guys remember? You remember anything that stands out for you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, having the time at home to do something that you just hadn't given yourself the time for, whatever that was, learning a new skill, all of the sourdough bread and the knitting and the I know people took up really amazing hobbies. Absolutely. Yeah, what else? You got a dog. Yeah, so many families welcomed new pets into their lives because they were home and they could. Absolutely. The what?
Community sings.
Community sings. Oh, yes, yes. Just being out on your street corners with everyone, singing from a distance together. Absolutely.
Babies.
Yes. There was plenty of time for those to come into the world, for sure. One of the other things I remember are the, like, images of, you know, Minneapolis, Chicago, New York, just quiet, dead. And that is, like, it's not necessarily a bright spot. It's not something we think about as, like, happy, because we want people around and want people together. But it represented people staying home and protecting each other and taking care of one another in this really great way. And so when that kind of hard stuff happens, we know that the best of us comes through, right? The best of us can come out, come together to do the hard stuff together. And we also know, I think, because we experienced that pandemic and we experienced the aftermath together, that that togetherness doesn't always hold, right? Eventually, we have our feelings, we see other people's feelings, we don't necessarily like other people's feelings, we don't necessarily like our own feelings, and then it just gets ruptured. And I've been through this enough times to know that it's part of the human experience to deal with that rupture as well. And so, going back to my painting for a moment, I wanted to say that, like, as I was painting this part with the bright happy, I started to realize that, so between these circles at one point was white paper, and it didn't feel right to have just, like, this bright white behind it. And I, up until today, like, as I was kind of preparing today, I was like, oh, I know what didn't feel right. What didn't feel right is I think it was kind of representing, like, the toxic positivity, the positivity that doesn't acknowledge that there's hard stuff going on, right? Just stay positive. And I knew in that moment that I couldn't stay positive, that the positivity I had now came with some gray. It came with a little bit of muting. And what I also started to realize simultaneously is that this hard part up here, this representation of all of the hard feelings, also had bright spots in it. Like, that it couldn't just be hard feelings. And that this crossing over and blending between was really critical for my own resilience. And so this painting has become, and I'll tell you, this is, like, basically a page out of a journal for me. But this painting has been something that I have unconsciously almost gone back to again and again and again. Whenever I get a little too stuck in the hard, I remember and I try to hold on to those things that are bright spots. Even the tiniest one that you can't quite convince yourself is a bright spot, if you can just lean into it, it can really help make that hard time a little bit easier. And so that practice, that's one of the big practices that I have for us today in terms of just how do we lean toward the happy and the hopeful when we need to, when we're a little too stuck in the hard. And how do we give ourselves permission to really lean into the hard and to give space for that? The last thing I'll say, so I started by saying that, like, my hard was something that I wasn't really even feeling at the time. And I actually, there's, like, a little heart down here in the middle of the river. It kind of represented, like, that's where I kind of left myself a little bit. And this painting at the bottom, which is a little bit harder to see, and you definitely can't see it on your paper because it was a last-minute decision to bring it, is, so the coloring sheets up here for the kids today are monsters with emotions on them, and it's really awesome. And as soon as I found out that we had monster emotion sheets, I was like, oh my gosh, I have a monster painting. I need to bring my monster painting. And so the monster painting, I just want to share a little about too, is at the time that I painted it, it was about 4 or 5 years into my recovery. And I had done everything under the sun as it relates to recovering. You know, the traditional therapy, exposure therapy, Reiki, Watsu, you name it, I've done it. And I reached a point where I was still struggling. I was still really angry, just not so much fun to be around. I was always kind of, I guess you could call it prickly, right? Like, and it wasn't always in my work life. My work life, I was pretty good. I could hold it together like the best of us, right? We all do that. But then I'd come home and I'd just be really prickly, and it got hard. And so at this moment in time, I had kind of come to some new awareness about my prickliness, and that I just felt really like I was a monster. And my husband likes to joke about how cute my monster was when it, like, even at my most, like, I'm a monster, it was just the cutest thing. But it hasn't stayed a monster. So I painted this over 6 weeks, and during that time, it started green and one-eyed and spiky-toothed and scaly. And as I was processing what I was going through in that moment, and those 6 weeks of time, I started to realize that, like, that's not who I am. I'm just a human being who's dealing with really hard stuff. And sometimes it makes that, you know, makes me not show up the way that I want to. But it's not like, I'm not a monster. I'm not this dehumanized thing. And I think so often we're just taught not to do that kind of humaning in front of people because it makes everybody else feel a little icky too. And it's true. But I think it's so important to hold on to ourselves in those hard times and create space for the possibility that we can be human beings who are vulnerable. So my scaly skin turned back into pink skin that's definitely not as rough and armored as the monsters. And it also just, like, I'm crying, and that those tears are turning into new life, and there's just a lot of representation there for me around just, like, the importance of, like, being with ourselves. So as we think about the art of togethering, just how do we hold on to ourselves? How do we hold on to each other? How do we hold on to the, like, bigger collective need for care and concern with one another? Those are the big things that I was kind of thinking about as I was preparing for today. So I'm going to give you some takeaways, and then we're going to do some art together. So we're going to actually invite you to make your own rivery, both sides, a representation of life and how you're feeling right now. But before we do that, I just wanted to share a few takeaways, things, lessons learned. So I think about kind of the art of togethering as almost everything in life. I'll just say this. Almost everything in life is a spectrum. It is not either or. It is not both, like, one side or the other, black or white. All of that is make-believe that we have kind of bought into in a way that's caused a lot of harm, I think. So I like to think of things on a spectrum. And we have personal, right? So as the person who has experienced the really hard thing, I had to remember and learn how to hold on to myself and stay together with myself. Oftentimes when we have a hard thing happen, there's, like, the way you were, and then there's the way you become, right? And if you hold on too hard to the way you were and you just, like, want to be that person again, you're not going to be able to see all that you can become, right? But there's threads that you want to hold on to and weave together. And that's, I think, a big part of what Fabric is always talking about, right? So that's one piece. And then the other piece is that people will not understand. The hard thing that you're going through, people won't understand in your circle all the time. But there will always be people who do understand. So not everyone's got the experience of falling off of a bridge, but there are 150 other people that do, that I know, and going to a group with them and sitting in a circle and sharing this really, like, random thought that I had when I was driving the other day, with anyone else, they'd be like, what? With them, they'd be like, totally, right? So you have to find your people, right? And they're not always going to be the same people that you started the pre-hard thing life with. And that doesn't mean that they can't become more in understanding. But if you're just like, why don't you understand? They can't. They can't in the way that the people who have been there with whatever it is can. So find those people. So you got the very personal in yourself experience. Next stage is if you love somebody who's going through a really hard thing, right? And that can look like a family member, can look like a spouse, can look like a kid in your life. When things are like hard, the private place is the hardest place. So you're gonna experience the hard with that person in a way that nobody else in the world is going to. So A, you have to take care of yourself, right? Very much important to take care of yourself. And then it's also important to like shift thinking away from like, you know, that anger is bad, right? Or that sadness, the depression, the whatever feeling that makes you maybe uncomfortable about what that other person is experiencing. Those are all good. Feelings are good. Feelings are good things. Sometimes behaviors are the place where we cause harm. And it's okay to say that. The most important thing that happened in my recovery was when I got the real truth of how my behavior was impacting other people so that I could change it, right? That's when I got the monster message and I needed to do something about it. And so when you're in a position to be with a person in that really hard place, it is important to find the way to tell the truth, but to tell it with a space like that doesn't shame and just really acknowledges the impact that it's having on you. And if you're going through it with somebody who's got the real impact of it, who, like, you know, you didn't fall off the bridge, but it still did happen to you, right? And so the ways in which it happened to you are also really, really important. And you won't be able to get the same care that you might need from that person because they have so much to deal with. But you do need to be able to take care of that part of yourself that has been hurt as well. The next stage is if you're in community. So if you're a Fabric member and you know folks who are going through hard things, you might, you know them. You might not be best friends with them or in a position to really get the full scope of their hard experience, but you're available and you want to be a support, right? So when you're in that position, the biggest important thing to take away is like, don't let the perfect be in the way of the good. So often we want to do it right. We want to give the right kind of care. We want to do the thing that they actually need us to do. And then we become paralyzed by all of the things we could do, and then we do none of them, right? And so not getting so caught up in that, doing it exactly the way it needs to be done, so that you can do something to stay in community with a person who's going through something hard. And I'll add to that, that like, if the person that needs the care says, this wasn't the thing I needed right now, that's okay, right? Prepare yourself that like, I'm gonna try this thing and I'm gonna know that it might not be the thing that this person needs right now, and that's okay. And I actually want to honor the fact that it takes a lot of courage to tell me that, and I'm gonna stay in community with this person and continue to listen and continue to do what I can. Asking about the hard thing doesn't like suddenly bring it back into the person's mind and heart. It's there, right? It's there nonstop. Like, I'm 15 years out from this thing happening to me, and I'm now in a place where, like, I don't think about it every day, you know? Like, it's not like, oh my gosh, which thing? But every time I go over a bridge, every time that I look at a scar, every time that I look at my tattoo, I am reminded of it. So your asking about a hard thing is not going to suddenly remind the person that's going through the hard thing of their hard thing. It is there, ever present. And you asking is just going to give someone a shoulder to lean on, someone to be in community with so they don't feel so alone with it. So then the last piece of the art of togethering is the super public. You saw it happen. You watched it on TV, but you don't know anybody. You can do some things. You can put together a care basket or donate some money or whatever the case might be, but it's not really a person in your immediate circle. When that happens, when we have this shift from really caring and everyone showing up with their best selves, and then we start to like go toward the for lack of a better word, like that's when we need to remember how to humanize. Like humanize. That it's so easy in our like little human selves to like judge people's behavior or talk about like, why are you being that way? Or whatever it is. Or to judge the actions or to any of the number of things that can trip us up. And if we can remember, even if we can remember when we were that person over there and remember how we were sometimes and maybe relate to what we're seeing from these other people that we don't know, then we can hold space for like how we all are susceptible to this, how we all show up as our whole selves in these hard ways sometimes. And that even in that, there's something to be hopeful about.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.